Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin DNR. Preventing food waste and composting scraps and uneaten veggies, grains, and fruit can help the environment. More dnr.wi.gov by searching food waste.
Well, how's your garden growing these days, or not growing? The flower garden or the vegetable garden, or how's your lawn looking? Those are some of the things we can talk about today with Sharon Morrissey, Milwaukee County UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent and Educator Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in for this edition of Garden Talk. And if you want to join us, I hope you will. Here's the number, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And Sharon Morrissey with us by phone. Hi, Sharon. Thanks for taking time to be with us.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for inviting me.
What are you getting? What kinds of questions are you getting in the Milwaukee area?
Well, this is the time of year when there are a lot of leaf spot kinds of problems, and plants are looking a little ragged, and plants are showing some of the effects of the drought periods that we had, and also some of the flooding issues that we had in various parts of the state. It's also a time of year when we start seeing some fall color. And some of that fall color is good, and some of that fall color is not so good because it's a sign of stress in our trees.
Yeah.
So if you're seeing real irregular patches of fall color in a particular tree, it might mean that tree has been experiencing some stress.
And this is a good time to remind people that those trees need to be watered right up till freeze up them.
Yes, that's right, especially evergreens. But it's really important to water mature trees and our evergreens in the fall. And mature trees all summer long. You don't think about that so much with the mature trees. Think, oh, it's got real deep root system. It's getting plenty of water. But not necessarily. They have a very shallow roots, really, and they compete with grass. So if they're growing in your lawn, the lawn's getting more water than the tree is getting.
Yeah.
And then with evergreens, it's really important to have them go into the winter really well hydrated. So giving a good soaking watering October, and be sure you do it in October, but you can do it now and then again in October, and put them into the winter in good condition.
Well, our lines are filled, so let's go to the phones and talk to John first in Salem. John, hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. I've been working over an area about 50 foot by 50 foot, and I removed about 25 buckthorn, or I'm in the process of doing that.
Good for you.
And I want to replace, that area will now get a little sunlight, and I would like to invite some native forest flowers. Now, there may be some in the soil dormant, but I want to help that a little bit. What might I get into that area? What could I plant that would be like native forest flowers?
Well, that's a really good point to make.
And it would be probably there'd be more shade than sun.
Okay. You made a good point, though, that once you remove the buckthorn and the invasive species, it is amazing how much of the natural flora that was there prior to the invasion by the buckthorn.
Yeah, it's been about 25 years.
Yeah, oh, my goodness. Well, the other thing you have to keep in mind is that there's probably quite a seed bank from the buckthorn in that area, and you're going to have to be really vigilant about pulling seedlings as they reemerge.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not off the hook yet. Probably never off the hook. But if you want to encourage some spring wildflowers, there really are a lot of nice woodland plants that you can grow in the shade. I'm trying to think of good sources for some of those woodland plants, too. And transplanting them now in the fall is a really good time to do it because soil temperatures are warm, air temperatures are nice and cool. There are the geraniums. I think of those in the shade quite nicely, and the native geraniums. No, not the be aware of this, but the geraniums that we grow up with the big red pom-poms, those are really pelargonium. I'm talking about geranium as a genus, and there are native geraniums that you can grow in the shade.
Okay.
The coral bells do well in the shade.
How do you spell that?
Coral bells.
Oh, chloral bells.
Coral bells.
Yeah,
coral. Yes, and that's actually heuchera, H-E-U-C-H-E-R-A. They do well in the shade. Pulmonium does well in the shade. That's a... there's the Italian bug gloss. There's Brunnera, does well in the shade.
What was that other one? Bug what?
Bug gloss, Italian bug gloss.
Okay.
there's Brunnera, which does well in the shade, that produces a little blue flower that looks like forget-me-nots. Forget-me-nots do well in the shade.
Sure.
So there really is quite a selection of perennial plants that you can grow. And I'd look on the Internet for a good source of native Wisconsin wildflowers.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, John. Appreciate it very much. Tim and Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Tim.
Hi, I got a question for you guys. I have several very large mature black walnut trees.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the only purpose that I could see for the black walnuts so far is for the squirrels or for my lawnmower to spit out.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there are obvious purposes. You know, people make inks and dry, you know, and you can get walnuts from the store. I'm wondering, is this something that can be done at home?
Well, it can, but it is not an easy task to get the walnuts out of their husks. I've heard all sorts of recommendations for how to do it. One of them is to put them on your driveway and drive over them with your car, because for two reasons. One is that the husks are very hard, and it's very hard to physically remove them by hand. And the other is that there's a dye, as you mentioned, in those husks, and if you get it on your hands will be stained for a good long time. So there's no real easy way to do it. But, yes, the nuts are perfectly edible. The thing you need to think about is whether those nuts are really in good condition or not. They may be insect-infested. It may not be apparent from the outside, but they may be infested. And there's something about putting them into a bucket of water, and the ones that float are infested because they have more air inside, because there's insects that have bored into them, and those that are good will sink to the bottom. So it's not as an easy task as you think, as you might think. I think the publication that I've seen on black walnuts is on the University of Minnesota website. You might want to check that out.
Yeah. Go to the University of Minnesota, probably Extension.
Website, yes.
Okay. So, Tim, I don't know what else we can tell you. They provide the trees provide some shade, but as we know, they also inhibit other plants from growing near them.
That's true, too.
So you've got some decisions to make there. Thanks a lot for calling. Deb in Oshkosh, it's your turn. Hi, Deb.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, we have a purple autumn ash that we had spaded into our front yard 4 years ago. And last year I noticed it losing leaves, which I thought was quite a bit. And then this year we have very barren branches. Do we have a disease or do we have something else going on? Because this is a 35-foot tall tree. We put it in to shade the house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's losing, I mean, it doesn't have as much shade as it had last year, and it was a big expense.
Yes, I'm sure it was. And that's one thing with planting large trees, trying to transplant a very large tree. Sometimes you don't gain as much as you think you're going to by planting a very large tree versus a smaller one. They say that for every inch of trunk diameter, it takes 1 year for that tree to get established. So if you transplant a tree that's got 2-inch trunk diameter, you know, a very small tree, it'll only take 2 years for it to really get established and then take off. If you plant one that is 6 inches in diameter or 4 inches in diameter, it takes that much longer. And I have a feeling it probably is transplant shock or transplant stress-related problems that you're having with that ash right now. The best thing you can do for it is to keep it well watered, but I'm always afraid when I say that, don't overwater it.
Don't flood it.
Yeah, and if you flood it, just do it once every couple weeks, not continuously. It does like to have moist soil, but that water needs to drain away from the soil as well. And then keep the entire root zone area of that tree where it's planted mulched with probably 3 inches of a wood chip mulch to keep the soil moist and to hold moisture in. And within the first couple of years, we don't really recommend much fertilization. But after the first couple of years, we do recommend fertilizing if the tree is struggling. And fall is a good time to fertilize trees. So I would recommend fertilizing this year because you said it was 4 years ago that it was planted, unless you've already done some fertilization to it.
What kind of fertilizer would you recommend?
Well, it doesn't matter as much what kind of fertilizer it is. It's how you're going to apply that fertilizer. There are tree spikes that are nice and easy. They're a solid form of fertilizer that you pound into the ground, and that would be done out at the drip line, you know, on the ground, the area where the water would drip off the canopy of the tree.
Oh, sure.
And, well, with a newly transplanted one, that's probably closer up to the tree, too, where the root zone is. And you'll need to moisten the soil probably before you pound those in, because if the soil is heavy clay or hard, it's hard to get those in. The other thing you can use is a root probe, and then they provide these little pellets or capsules that you put into the root feeder. You hook up your garden hose, the water runs through, it dissolves the capsule, and then you move around to the next spot. And it tells you how many capsules to use per inch of trunk diameter. Those are two very convenient ways to do it. And you can also use a sprinkler, an oscillating sprinkler, to water the whole area over it after you've put some granular fertilizer down, and then allow that fertilizer to sink down into the ground. That will spur the grass, but at this point that's okay too, because it's all right to do lawn fertilization right now as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'd recommend doing with it right now, and then be patient. It may not look great for a few years, but let it get over this stress of being transplanted and give it some tender loving care.
We have left the root area with, I planted flowers, so it got water, but very rarely flooded. So thank you for your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Deb. Clark in Stevens Point, hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have actually two questions, one of which is, I've lived in Stevens Point now for about 14 years, and we have sandy soil, and we've always had somewhat of an ant problem, but this year it seems to be like four or five-fold. I've never seen anything like it. In fact, I've sprayed them with an insecticide by the directions, you know, like a Goodspan or something you mix with water and spray. When that didn't work, 2 weeks later they came back. I used the granular type you shake out of the bottom of the pouch that you buy. Again, this is all insecticide that you typically buy at like a Fleet Farm for it. And I'm just bewildered with that problem. But the other question I had was, I believe several years ago I was listening to this station and you had a similar program on, and there was somebody that came up with a formula. The formula is to be put into one of those jugs that you mix with hose water and you spray onto the lawn. And in lieu of buying the weed and feed formulas for $5 or $6, the prescription, and I believe this is the prescription, but correct me if I'm wrong, it would be one can of beer with a few drops of dish soap and a tablespoon or two of ammonia mixed.
And I'll stop you right there, because we don't recommend any of those sorts of recipes of common household items to control insects or diseases or to fertilize plants. So we do have recommendations for ant control, and my understanding of it is that when you have ant hills or ant mounds in the lawn or in driveways and such, the main thing is that the chemical is not getting down to the bottom of the mound, because it's really very deep into the soil. And that with whatever product you're using, especially with a granular, it needs to be drenched into the soil. There are products that you mix with water, and then you drench those into the soil with gallons of water, like a 5-gallon bucket of water, to carry that pesticide all the way down to the bottom of the mound. By sprinkling it on top and using it just on the soil surface, you're not really getting to the heart of the matter. You're only killing the ones that are right up there at the top. So that may be the key to control for you for the ant mounds. I know we do have a very good ant publication on the UW Extension website, thelearningstore.uwex.edu. We have a very good publication on ants and all the different types of ants and different sets of conditions, because in sandy soil it may be somewhat different than the clay soils I'm used to dealing with. So I'd really recommend that you go to that website and check out that publication.
And good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the call. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Larry Mueller here talking with Sharon Morrissey, UW Extension Milwaukee County Horticulture Agent and Educator. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer, by the way, and you're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller with my guest, Sharon Morrissey, and we go right back to the phones and to Frank in Arborvitae. Frank, hello. Frank, you there?
Hello.
Hi.
I have a simple question.
Oh, you just jinxed
it. Up here in Vilas County, we don't stay. We're in a summer home kind of a situation. We don't stay late enough to be able to mulch after the ground freezes. And my question is, I'm talking about perennial beds that have a lot of shade-loving plants like hostas and hucheras and bleeding hearts and stuff like that. Is it better to just leave everything over the winter and clean up in the spring, or clean up in the fall, and if we have a bad snow winter, have the plants more or less exposed and dry out?
Well, I guess you sort of are talking about two different issues. Mulching for winter protection with perennials is really only necessary on perennials that have been dug, divided, and transplanted their first year. It's the first year you've planted them, or you've dug them and divided them and replanted them. Then you would need to put an organic mulch layer on top to help to keep them from heaving up out of the ground with the freeze and thaw cycle throughout the winter. But if you're talking about cleaning up all of those dead stems and leaves and plants that have died back that are going to emerge again next year, as perennials do, that probably, in your case, would be best done in the spring. Because if you cut them down in the fall, you do leave them open and exposed, and unless you only cut them down part way, because the stems will help to hold some snow and collect some leaves as they blow around, and that in itself will help to insulate the root systems and provide sort of a natural mulch. So you can cut them down part way if you want. You can leave them until spring if you want to. The main reason people cut them down in the fall is for appearances. And if you're not there and you're not really concerned about that, then cutting them down in the spring is just fine. Part of it depends on when you've got the time for it, too.
Well, spring is always busy, but I guess I agree with you, and I thank you for your advice.
All right. Thanks, Frank, for calling. And Bill in La Crosse, what's on your mind? Hi. Bill, are you there? Oh, must have lost Bill. All right. Well, let's try Jane in Hoka, Minnesota. Hi, Jane.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
And we got nailed by the big storms a couple weeks ago with all the mudslides and high winds, and lost about 15 trees in our yard. But there is about a 40-foot white pine and 40-foot red pine that I'd like to save. The roots are still intact. Is there any possible way to wench that up and tie it to another tree to keep that alive?
So they're now leaning over the...
Yeah, they're lifting at about a 45-degree angle.
Mm. And the entire root system is kind of pulling up with it?
It is, but they still are underground. The rest of the trees, the root systems are not intact at all, but these still are.
Yeah. Well, these are kind of the issues you're dealing with there. First of all, you can straighten them up. It will take some mechanical assistance to do that, obviously,
okay,
with large trees like that. And you can straighten them back up, and then you would need to guy wire them to hold them in place. And you'd need to make sure that whatever stakes you're using to tie the tree off to, and I wouldn't tie it off to another tree or something. It probably would be best if you could tie them off to stakes in the ground and have those stakes outside of the area of soil that's been disturbed in, you know, by the root system. So don't stake them into their own disturbed root system.
Right.
Okay.
The other,
so we're talking the distance away then.
Yes. Probably. Yes. Because you probably can't tie a rope, you know, just a few feet up and expect to have that hold the tree up with a 40-foot tree. You probably would need to go about a third of the way up at least. And then the other issue, though, is how much damage they sustained as they were pulled down and pulled over. Some of that damage may not be apparent, and you may not know what that the extent of that damage is until a few years have passed. You may see it next summer, because if there has been some mechanical damage to the trunk or to the roots, then next summer, once it turns hot again, there'll be a demand for moisture, and if there's damage to the roots or the trunk, they won't be able to supply the moisture to the tree, and you'll start to see the effects in the canopy of the trees.
Okay.
And you may or may not be able to tell that right now to see if it's even worth your while to try and save them. So, you know, you have to kind of weigh the expenses against the potential loss against the potential benefits.
Exactly. Okay. And I had one other. I'm trying to salvage a Russian olive that was also taken down. And there's a small branch just growing on the bottom 2 feet of the trunk. And I left that with the little branch. Is there a possibility of that maintaining itself?
Plants always amaze me at how resilient they are and what they will tolerate.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. Okay.
So it's possible.
Worth a try.
Yeah, it's worth a try.
Just keep it watered and, okay.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, the issue, too, is whether a Russian olive is worth saving or not. You know, Russian olives do have their problems. They are not long-lived plants because of the fungus problems they have and because of structural problems that they have. So, you know. You have to ask yourself that question, too, whether it's worth it or maybe this is an opportunity.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Jane. Thanks for calling. Sounds like Jane's got a lot of planning to do there. Losing, 14, 16 trees? That's a lot.
Boy.
Peggy in Rice Lake, your turn. Hi, Peg.
Hi. I have two questions. One, I just caught the tail end of the black walnut thing. Do those roots kill other trees? And my other question is... about the, we've got box elder bugs, and I'm just wondering if what you would recommend for them.
All right, let's talk about the walnuts first. Black walnut is a tree that produces a chemical from its roots and its leaves and its fruit or seeds, nuts, that inhibits the growth of other plants in its root zone.
Okay.
So it won't. If a plant is already growing there, then that's one of the plants that's not affected by the black walnut. If you're trying to plant something into that area, you're kind of take your chances. There are a series of lists that you can look at, but I find that a lot of those lists do contradict each other. So,
And the roots go way long?
We found that the roots go 2 and 3 times the width of the tree. You know, they used to always have the drawing of the tree that only goes out to the drip line. We found that that's not true. The roots go well beyond that. On a mature tree, it could be 60 feet.
Okay.
So that's the black walnut issue. The other one is box elder bugs. They a couple things about them. They don't do any real damage. They're eating the seeds from the maples, and they're not really damaging other plants. They're a nuisance. Where they become a nuisance is in and around your home, and if they're getting into your home, For that, we really only recommend sealing up all the entrances, openings that they might have to get in.
Okay.
So no real chemical control recommended for them. The good news with the box elder bugs this year, however, is that since it was so moist and box elder bugs like dry conditions, next year they may not be so bad because the moisture is not good for the population and the population may, well, crash because of the moisture this year. So,
but in Rice Lake, I don't know. How much moisture did you get this year in Rice Lake?
Well, we didn't get much until just lately we've gotten a lot.
No, okay.
Well, that's good.
All right.
That's good to
help. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Peg. Louie in Oak Creek, you are next. Hi, Louie.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a couple of linden trees, and ordinarily the linden tree has been a pretty robust tree for us, but this year they seem to be having a premature leaf drop from the crown, yellowing and dropping from the crown.
There are a couple of problems that lindens can have. It's not very common. They are a good, robust tree. They have a couple of minor problems that most people can just live with. Losing leaves from the crown of the tree and the upper portions of the tree sounds like a stress issue to me, and I would suspect that the droughts that we had down here in southeastern Wisconsin during the summer, we had a prolonged drought, and in fact, I saw that on August 17th, I believe it was, they declared a drought emergency in areas of the state, the southeast being one of those areas, for farm fields, etc. And then on that same day is when it started to rain so heavily, we got so much rain. But we did have a serious drought going on, and that can definitely cause that kind of problem. If it's something you're seeing regularly, you know, it can be, you can try to use some tender loving care, as I described with another caller's trees, to mulch the entire root zone, keep the plant well watered throughout the season so it doesn't experience the droughts. Even if it's a mature tree, it needs to be kept watered during the growing season. And then also fertilizing it in the fall if it's suffering. So this fall would be a good time to fertilize.
All right. Would any pruning help with that? Try and cut down on the amount of support it's going to need in terms of water or nutrients?
No, I wouldn't recommend pruning to cut down on the demand at this point. I would try and encourage the plant to grow more vigorously instead by providing better environmental conditions for it, keeping the soil moisture, not allowing it to go into drought, and providing some fertilizer for it for the next growing season.
Okay.
And then watch and see what happens in the next couple of years. You know, see if that helps improve it a little bit next year. It may be a gradual process. There is a linden borer that sometimes attacks lindens, and that's a possibility. I'm not real familiar with the kinds of holes that you would see bored into the trunk, but it is a borer that bores into the wood. And there are a couple of other insect problems that they may have. But I would check for those, the signs of that. But it probably is due to stress more likely than anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Bill in La Crosse, on to you. Hi, Bill.
Yes, hi. Thank you for the program. I have recently found a lot of creeping Charlie in our otherwise nice lawn. Is there any good recommendation that you might have to get rid of that?
No.
That
have
is
no
the
good
worst.
Recommendations, unfortunately.
Yeah,
no,
it's the worst plant.
I wish I could give you a good, easy way to deal with it, but to keep up with it is the most important thing. And it's, you know, there are some ways to reduce it, weaken it, maybe get rid of it somewhat for the time being. Culturally, you know, where you can cover it over with a rug or boards and kill it off that way. Hand pulling is recommended too. That's all very difficult to do, and you never get long-lasting control. The other option is herbicides, and herbicides can be used on creeping Charlie, and the key there is timing. And we're coming up on a very important timing for control of all broadleaf weeds, including creeping Charlie, in the fall, after we've had a few nights in the 30s, is when you want to put a broadleaf weed killer on creeping Charlie. And they do recommend that you use a broadleaf weed killer that has dicamba in it. And dicamba can only be used once a year over the root zones of trees and shrubs, so be aware of that, because you can do this again in the spring. If you do it in the spring, you want to do it when it's just coming into flower. So timing is the real issue here, and then using a broadleaf weed killer. Triclopyr is another broadleaf weed killer that we find has a pretty good effect on creeping Charlie, and it, too, is a broadleaf weed killer that won't kill the grass.
What was the name of that last one?
Triclopyr, T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R. Triclopyr.
Right, T-R-I-T-L-O?
C-L-O.
C-L-O?
C-L-O, okay.
P-Y-R. And that one, I think it's sold as a chickweed, clover, oxalis, something. It's got a list of it, and that killer. That's the name of the product, and I know that Ortho produces it as just a concentrate.
And I guess with that, as I've heard you say on the show in the past, Sharon, it won't look like it's dead after you put the herbicide on, but hopefully it weakens the plant, and if you get a good winter, cold winter, you can winter kill it.
Yes. And then next spring, you may need to repair that area with some good grass seed to get that going again, too. And it could help to kind of outcompete the creeping Charlie trying to come back in.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Mike in Sparta, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I guess, the first thing is a follow-up on the ants that you were talking about 10, 15 minutes ago, mm-hmm. is I've been getting ant hills popping up in my yard, you know, kind of mounds, mm-hmm. and it's pretty sandy, and haven't had any luck with spraying, as you told, the other person, but I'm trying some Taro liquid ant bait traps. They're you puncture them, they go on the ground near the hills, and they're supposed to, I guess, take the poison down deeper into the colony and take care of them that way. And I was wondering if you had any idea on the effectiveness of those, or if I really do need to, if that's an alternative to just, you know, doing the 5-gallon soaking like you were talking about.
Yeah, I don't know. I would guess that would be maybe a more expensive alternative, and then you do have the bait sitting out in the lawn, which, you know, might be a problem with domestic pets around,
right,
and stuff like that. But I'm not real familiar with the product other than that.
And that website that you said, if you could give me that website again, please.
Oh, the UW Extension,
right,
website?
Oh, the Learning Store.
The Learning Store.
I think it's just Learning
Store.
Or
is it learningstore.uwex.edu.
Right.
Learningstore.uwex.edu. Okay, uwex.edu.
Right.
Got it.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And then just go to, you'll be right there at the publications if you do
right.
It that way. Clenora in Westcott. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello, thank you for the program.
Sure.
Appreciate it. I'm trying to transplant some white pines, small ones.
Okay.
Is there anything special I need to do?
How small is small for a white pine?
They're 18 inches tall.
Okay.
Well, in that case, no, nothing real special. You want to take as much soil and root mass with them as possible if you're digging them and then moving them to a new location. We don't recommend that you amend the soil that you're putting them into, but we do recommend that you make a rather large hole width-wise, not depth necessarily, but width-wise. It should only be as deep as the root mass you're going to put into it, but wider than that, because that area that's worked up will be easier for the tree to move its roots into. Okay. On either side. And then mulch over that whole area with 3 inches of wood chip mulch. Water them, keep them well watered, but don't drown them. So water them and allow that water to soak in, and then wait a full week or 14 days even and water again. That should take care of it.
And probably, isn't it also true you should make sure that you're planting at the same depth so that you're not planting it deeper than it was originally planted, Sharon?
Yes, exactly. It's very important. So
okay.
The portion of the stem of the root, trunk that's exposed right now is the same amount that should be exposed when you transplant them.
All right, and you recommend wood chips as a mulch around it?
Yes, anything organic that helps to hold in the moisture.
Okay. All right. Very good.
Thanks, Clenora.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. And you can join in. We finally have some open lines again. So you can get on at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org here as we visit with Sharon Morrissey. And Richard in Sauk County is next. Hi, Richard.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good.
I have some trees and bushes. Like I have a couple of dogwood that came up in our flower bed, and I got some oak trees, and I'm in a wooded area that, you know, are small and I would like to transplant out. Is that a good time to do it, and do we need to wait until they go dormant in the fall of the year, or just what's the best time for if you want to do fall?
Well, fall really is a good time to transplant deciduous plants. And the reason for that is that the soil temperatures are still nice and warm, and the soil will stay warmer longer than the air temperatures do. Plus, the cooler air temperatures help the plant to kind of concentrate on growing roots so they get really well established. So this is a great time to do it. You don't need to wait until they go dormant to do it. You can do it any time now. We're in the end of September already. You can do it any time now.
Okay, up until middle of October or... Just any time, right?
Yes, any time. And actually, you can probably do it up until the ground freezes, but it's better to get them in earlier so that they can take advantage of those warmer soil temperatures and get some roots grown before they go into winter. But mulch them over real well, too, because during the winter, that disturbed soil has air in it that will accumulate moisture, and then as it freezes and thaws, it could heave them out of the ground and damage the root system that
way. Yeah, and you certainly want to keep it well-watered.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
One more quick question. When you look at nursery plants or anything, you know, shrubs or whatever, and it says full sunlight or part sun or part shade or shade, how many hours of sunlight, when they talk full sunlight, would constitute full sun, or you know, partial sun. Half sun?
That's a very good question, and I don't think I've ever really seen a real definitive answer to that. But generally what they say is for full sun, it needs to be 6 to 8 hours in the middle part of the day, because the early sun and the late sun are not as intense and don't provide as much benefit to the plant. So it has to be in the middle part of the day. You can't have 8 hours at the end of the day or 6 hours near the end of the day. That's for full sun. Partial sun or partial shade, you know, you're getting into some gray areas there. And part of it has to do with how high the canopy of trees is that's providing the shade, a very high canopy where it's kind of a bright shade because a lot of ambient light gets in, but not any direct sunlight gets in.
Mm-hmm.
Another form of partial sun or partial shade would be if some sun gets in for less than 6 hours a day, but then the remainder of the day it's in shade. Very dense shade would be shade. You know, that would be considered straight shade. And then there's the issue of moisture in shade. Is it a dry shade or is it a moist shade? So it's really, really hard to tell, and a lot of it will be trial and error.
Yeah.
Now, does it hurt to, because I have, you know, maples and, you know, and oak and that. Now, oak are, they don't really have a real heavy canopy, but the maples and the elms, they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking of, you know, if I can get up into some of those trees with my big ladder and prune some of those smaller branches out, maybe to kind of thin the tree out a little bit. Does that make sense?
It definitely does, and that is one thing we recommend when people say they have too much shade in their yard and they can't grow anything because of trees, thin out the canopy.
Okay.
Remove those lower branches to make it a higher canopy, and or get inside the canopy and remove some of those limbs from within the canopy and thin it out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that sounds great. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And let's see. Let's go to Grant in Milwaukee. Hi, Grant.
Oh, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi. I use a lot of horse manure in my yard under the bushes and in the garden and throw it in the compost heap and all that, but I was warned that it can turn my stuff quite acidic, and I was wondering if there's a way I could counteract that or monitor it or something.
Do you compost that at all, or does it just go?
Well, I get it from, you know, the people who have the horses, and they have piles out back, you know, so they kind of rotate the piles, like they start on the right and they work left, so it's aged, probably aged months, you know. And then I'd throw some in my compost heap, and some I just throw, like, under my bushes. I planted a bunch of Japanese barberry from just little seedlings that fell off another one. So it works really well. I mean, where I didn't put the manure, you can see a definite, you know, size difference.
Yeah, well,
I was warned, like, hey, you don't want to get too acidic and throw too much down.
Yeah, well, there are a couple of issues with manure, and one of them is, as Larry was getting to, is that if you use it too fresh before it's composted some by itself, and it sounds like this sitting in the piles is composting some, so it shouldn't be any problem. If it's not composted well enough, if it is too fresh, too green, it can burn plants somewhat. So that doesn't sound like that's a problem for you. As far as being acidic and changing, like, the pH of the soil, if you're in the Milwaukee area, your soil pH is probably pretty high anyway, and so it would do nothing more than just improve the soil, probably, if it did acidify the soil, because we do have such a problem with that.
Maybe it'll be... maybe buffer the whatever, the pKa of the, if you will.
Yes, it's because of our limestone content in our soils, and it does have a very high buffering capacity, and that's why we can't really even give recommendations to people for how to lower the pH effectively, because it does buffer it so well. So you'd have to have a very acidic product to add to the soil to really hurt.
It doesn't
the
stink or
pH.
Anything. It's really nice stuff. Like, I just throw it in the back of my truck and it's
keep
like
using
it.
There,
so. Yeah. Are so good. I was just warned, and I'm like, hey, everything's taken off.
Yeah, you're lucky you've got a good source for that type of manure and keep using it.
Thanks a lot, Grant, for calling. Appreciate it. Sharon Morrissey, Milwaukee County UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent and Educator, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer on this, the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And if you have a Garden Talk question for us, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Lorene from Toma is online, so let's go there next. Hi, Lorene.
Hi, good morning, folks. To avoid garden withdrawal, I've started some container vegetables because I have a good spot in the sun, and I plan to put like a mirror under them to maximize the light. And right now they're at the stage where the bees are pollinating the tomato blossoms, and only one of my cucumber plants survived. So I'm worried about pollination once they move inside. Do I have to do anything, or will they self-pollinate if I have a fan blowing on them, which I highly doubt?
Well, the tomatoes will. The blue tomatoes are wind-pollinated.
Oh, okay.
So that shouldn't be a problem.
But what about the cucumber? Only one of mine came up. The other one didn't. So I only have one single cucumber, but lots of blossoms.
Yeah, the cucumbers do require insect pollination. Now, you can do the pollination yourself, too. It's
That's
a little bit of a tedious process.
Yeah. Is it difficult, or do you just brush it on there?
You just brush it on, and you can use, like, a little paintbrush if you want. Then you have to be able to distinguish the male flower from the female flower.
Oh, good luck there.
Yeah. So it's really not as hard as you might think, because they are,
even
with a cucumber, it's a relatively large flower. And so with the female flower, you'll see a little bit of a bulge underneath the flower, like where the petals connect at the base of the flower. There'll be a little bulge there that will eventually turn into the fruit if it's pollinated. And with the male flower, you won't see that. Then on the inside, if you compare the two, one's kind of more, it looks like coxcomb almost. You know the coxcomb flower that's kind of gnarly and contorted and stuff?
Okay.
Well, it's yellow and it's like that. That's the female one. And then the male is more of a, just a spike that has pollen on it. So you can use a paintbrush to do it. You can just take the blossom off, take the flower, the petals off the blossom, and then use just the stamen itself to pollinate the female.
Is there a bulletin on that, or should I just look for a good book on that?
No. I would look for a good book on it. And, you know, you can Google it on Google. On the Internet, you can Google images and just do pollination, and you will definitely come up with pictures of squash-type, vining-type crops, flowers.
All right.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Lorene. Jim in Palmyra, hello to you.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have some hostas growing at the base of a silver maple tree, which aren't doing real well. They've been in there for 2 years and are approximately, about a foot high at the most.
Okay, and what do you want to do with those hostas? You want to perk them up or move them, or what do you want to do?
Well, I don't know.
You don't know why they're not doing any better?
Right.
Okay.
Well, some hostas only grow a foot tall. It depends on the variety. You know, if it's a cultivar, that doesn't get real large. But if you know that these are growing elsewhere, you've seen the same one, or you know where you got this from, you dug, divided, transplanted, and these aren't growing as well as the others, it could be a competition issue between the trees and the hostas. Hostas do grow pretty well under trees, and the competition isn't a huge issue usually.
Mm-hmm.
And silver maples are pretty vigorous, but you know you may need to put a little bit more compost around them or a little bit more mulch around them to keep the soil a little moister. They don't like total darkness and total shade, you know. So if it's too deep a shade under the silver maple, that may be an issue too. They do like to get some sun at the earlier or later part of the day, rather than the middle of the day. So even though they're a shade lover, they do like to get some good sunlight, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, good luck.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Jack in Waukesha. Hello.
Hi. Back in probably July, I called in looking for information on Kalanchoa houseplants.
Mm-hmm.
And your Madison compatriot was Larry's guest that day, and we didn't come up with anything, and she put me on to one of her master gardeners at the Madison office, and we didn't do anything there, and we went to the publications list, couldn't find anything. They referred me to your office, and I talked to your master gardener who said she'd been there, I don't know, like 100 years and had never heard of such a thing.
Well, I know exactly who that is, 100 years. She stands out. Yeah, no.
She's almost as old as I am. I was in Dick Schneider's first master gardener class,
oh,
and I got
gosh.
The little certification to hang on the wall.
Fantastic.
And even I couldn't get anywhere. But I stumbled across this in my local pick and save store.
Oh my gosh.
I was walking through their floral department slowly, looking to see if they had any Kalanchoas out there, and the clerk snuck up behind me and said, "Can I help you?" And I hemmed and hawed and said I was looking for that, and she says, "Oh, just a minute." And she popped into her back room, got an old, what looked old and beat up, Better Homes and Gardens houseplants book out.
Uh-huh.
And their Kalanchoas and jade plants split a page with text and pictures.
Huh.
So if anybody was, after I brought this up this summer, was trying to find the same information, because Kalanchoas are one of the most popular houseplants, they can try to find this in the Better Homes and Gardens book, maybe in their grocery store's floral department like I did.
Oh, that's a good story, Jack. And, you know, sometimes it takes a little detective work, doesn't it, Sharon?
Well, it sure does. And, you know, nobody knows all the answers either. That, I think, is one thing about horticulture that keeps people interested, too, is that there's always something new to learn. And we, you know, try with the university resources to give people information and connect them to the information and the answers to questions. But, yeah, it's part of the fun of horticulture is doing that sleuthing.
Thanks, Jack. Thanks a lot for calling. Deb in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I have a problem with a lilac bush. I planted a Korean lilac, and it's about 3.5 feet tall. It's in the backyard next to the alley. And over the winter, I got some help from a lot of very nice neighbors with snow plowing and that sort of thing, and they threw snow on top of the bush and completely flattened it.
Oh, dear.
So in the spring, I used some soft fabric strips, and I started pulling the branches up a little at a time, and I got it back into this beautiful shape. So how could I protect it this winter? I mean, I've talked to the neighbors about it, but it's kind of hard to avoid. And what could I do to protect that a little bit so that it doesn't get flattened again?
Oh, boy. You know, it sounds like you have to have some sort of physical barrier to keep the snow from being piled on top of that plant.
Okay.
I know you'll just have to be a little creative with that. And if you have a hard time coming up with something, then I'd kind of question that location for it. You may not have a lot of other choices. You may have a small yard and
mm-hmm.
nowhere else to put it. But, yeah, physically, the damage, you know, it sounds like you avoided it this year.
Yes.
Did it leaf out?
It did. It's beautiful, actually. I have, there's a hole in the middle yet, but there seem to be some smaller branches that are starting up there, so I'm hopeful it will fill in again.
Yeah.
I put a fence around it.
Well, I guess that was my thought. I wondered about, I've seen other trees and bushes and things that have been tied up with burlap, and I'm not quite sure about doing that or if that would be an option or...
Well, unfortunately, I don't think that's necessarily going to protect it that much. It would keep the branches from being weighted down by the snow that's piled on top of it. But if they're going to plow snow on top of it, it'll just push the whole thing over.
Okay.
The burlap covering in the winter on plants is usually with a broadleaf evergreen or a needle evergreen,
either one,
that loses moisture as the wind blows across the leaves, and so it's trying to prevent that.
Okay.
So it would need to be probably some physical structure, like a fence, like
okay.
Larry says, some snow fencing or something.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think we can manage that.
Well, all right, Deb.
Great. Thank you for your help.
Thanks for calling. And Luba in Madison, you are next. Hi.
Oh, thank you. Well, I have a question about dandelions, and I wondered if you cut the heads of the dandelion and some of the roots and make sure it doesn't surface during the fall, will that dandelion outwit me and come out in the spring?
Well, that is one approach. You know, and when you're kind of budding out dandelions from your yard by using one of those little probe things that you pop them out of the ground with, you're probably not getting the entire plant anyway, so you are just getting a portion of the root. So that's the hard part. If you just cut the root and remove the seed head, you've kind of just set it back. The flower head or the seed head is what will produce seeds for future generations. But if you're just cutting the root, it probably will re-sprout from that root. It's important to get the entire thing up, and that's why so many people choose herbicides to treat dandelions with. A systemic herbicide that's taken down into the root system, it probably will kill it more thoroughly than just cutting the roots by hand.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. Marla in Madison, hi to you.
Hi there. I have a question and a comment. My question is about raspberry bushes. I was going to plant some, or was hoping to plant some this fall, and I went to the Extension publication and looked up some of the ones that are good for this part of the state, or in Wisconsin, but I wondered if it was okay to plant them in the fall, because I noticed it said to plant them in the spring, and then if there were any on that website that were your, or that publication that were your favorites, I guess.
Oh, those are good questions. They do say to plant them in the spring, and I think part of that is that's when the canes are available, and the canes that you get in the spring to plant will be probably bare root, and bare root canes, then they're dug in the fall from the nursery, they're kept over winter in a dormant state, and then they're ready to go in the spring. So you may have a hard time finding raspberries to plant at this time of year.
Okay.
If you are just taking cuttings from plants that you already have and you're taking stems along with some root system, you could probably do that this time of year, same as any other plant. Warm soil temperatures, cool air temperatures help them get established. Mulching them would be important to keep them freezing and heaving out of the ground, same sort of thing with most other plants. So that's probably why the recommendation is mostly spring, though, is that's when they're most available as bare root plants. Mm-hmm.
And with that, we need to take a quick look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net. I'm Larry Mailer with Sharon Morrissey on this edition of Garden Talk. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mailer. My guest today, Sharon Morrissey, Milwaukee County UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent and Educator. Lots of things we can talk about with her. I know we'll have questions about fire blight on apple trees and white ash trees, some winter injury issues. Someone, I think, might have some comments on plants crushed by snow as well. Well, what about you? If you have a question about your flowers or your vegetables, or maybe it's the trees or the lawns or the shrubs that's bothering you, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890, and email us at talk@wpr.org. And we'll be right back after this look at the news. Stay with us. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mailer here with my guest, Sharon Morrissey, Milwaukee County UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent and Educator. Really glad to have her with us again. If you want to join in, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. And Holly in Elm Grove is online. So let's go right to Holly. Hi, Holly. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a plain old ordinary apple tree, a contorted hazelnut, that Harry Lauder's walking stick thing, and a sergeant crab that's been in place for 10 years, all within the same vicinity of one another. And this spring, everything started to go downhill. I brought in an arborist who looked at the apple tree and said, "It's fire blight. You will lose the whole works. It's sort of dying big branch by big branch."
Mm-hmm.
And I've cut off the dead branches and am now wondering, since I'm also losing the crab, and that's clearly dead on one half, can the fire blight transfer to that crab? And if I were to replace that crab, am I just putting something in a similar spot that's going to succumb to the fire blight? And is there any chance that that's what also seems to be killing the contorted hazelnut, which was absolutely the most spectacular piece that anybody'd ever seen.
Well, that's a very good question. The apple tree and the crab apple tree are very closely related, so they do suffer from some of the same diseases, and fire blight is a possibility on both of those plants. But there are varying degrees of susceptibility and resistance among apples and crab apples. So, yes, it can transfer. Being close to each other, knowing that one has fire blight, even if the other is a resistant variety, it's only resistant, it's not immune. So there is always the possibility. If you wanted to plant another crab apple into that area, you have a whole host of choices to make of resistant crab apples, resistant to three different diseases, fire blight, apple scab, and rust. Those are the three diseases that the industry has bred against for years and years and years now. So you could select a crab apple to plant in this spot once those two are gone, to take the place that probably won't suffer from the same problems just because the other ones were there. It doesn't mean you're going to have problems with the next one.
Okay.
So that's still a good option for you.
Sure.
And as far as the Harry Lauderer's walking stick, I'm not aware of it being susceptible to fire blight. I don't know if it's in the same family. I'm trying to think if they're both in the Rosaceae family, because the crab apples are in the Rosaceae family, and a lot of our fruit trees and nut trees are in the Rosaceae family. But I don't know if Harry Lauderer's walking stick is or not. But it's not even the same genus.
No.
So it's less likely that one would get fire blight.
Well, whatever it's got, it's going to take it out, and it's just fabulous. It's about 15 feet high and about 15 feet wide.
Oh, my gosh.
Just spectacular. Oh. And it actually produces nuts.
Oh, my gosh.
And so now it's about to be gone. So.
No, I'm sorry.
But thank you for the information. I think I'll go crab apple tree hunting.
That's a good idea. This is a good time to do that, too.
Thanks, Holly. Jesse in Richland Center, we get to you next. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. We have some white ash trees that are suffering from winter injury, and we actually contacted our local extension office, and they recommended some of the Job quick-release fertilizer spikes, and he said he told us not to use the slow-release ones, but all I can find online or in any of the stores are the slow-release spikes, and so we called him back wondering if there was any alternatives, and we still haven't gotten any information or any other recommendations. So I was wondering if you might be able to tell me what we could use to try to save these white ash trees.
Well, I'm not sure that the fertilizers are going to necessarily save them or not, but they certainly will help the ash tree and reduce the stress they're under and give them some of that tender, loving care I was talking about earlier. And there are other brands besides Job, and with the tree spikes, in fact, I usually find that they're not a slow-release or fast-release variety. I don't, types. So if you're looking specifically for Job spikes, that may be a part of the problem. There are other tree fertilizer spikes to use. They're large, maybe 4 inches long and maybe an inch across. So they're relatively large, and you pound those into the ground. the slow release is not going to give it as quick a reaction and a quick assistance as just a normal fertilizer would. He's right about that. So all I can think is that you keep shopping, or use a root probe. You can buy a Ross's root feeder. I don't know if there are a lot of other brands, but Ross is the most common one.
Okay.
And it's a little spike that you put down into the ground. It's a long spike, maybe 18 inches long, and at the top it has a little chamber. You hook your hose up to it. In the chamber you put the fertilizer cartridge, and as the water flows past it and down into the probe and down into the ground, it takes it dissolves the fertilizer and takes it with. I've found those on sale for like $10. When they're not on sale, they might be $15 or $20, maybe $30 even. So it's an investment that you make for your trees if you're going to have those trees or have trees for any length of time. It's a nice, easy way to fertilize trees, too.
Okay.
You might want to try that instead.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Shirley from Berlin wants to know how you balance watering gardens when there's a water shortage in your county.
Well, rain barrels are probably a good way to do that. If you know that you have water restrictions occasionally in your county or in your location, your municipality imposes those water restrictions, a rain barrel is a great way to have a supply of water that you can use. And you may need to have more than one rain barrel. The roof area, even a small roof area, will fill a 55-gallon drum in a quarter-inch rainstorm very quickly. So you'll probably need a couple of barrels, and then you'll always have that water there and available for those types of restriction.
Good idea. Stella in Sturgeon Bay, you're next. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I was calling in response to the woman. I didn't catch all of her call, but who I gather that her a shrub or a plant was crushed by her neighbors clearing snow during the winter.
Yeah.
We had experience being in the UP and the snow belt.
Yeah.
And the people up there, the trees, particularly the evergreens that they've planted in the tree lawn along the street, where the snow plows throw up snowbanks higher than you can see over, routinely every winter, they build structures out of 2x4 lumber that looks kind of like four ladders surrounding the tree. It's kind of a pyramid shape, and it's not closed with plywood. It's just the 2x4 structure over the trees, and that carries the my memory, and I'm not sure this is totally accurate, and it, of course, would depend on the size of the plant, is that it's about a foot square at the top hole.
Yeah.
And the structure carries the weight of the snow and protects the plant.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. It's done every year, so obviously it works. It works.
It must. Thanks, Stella.
Uh-huh. That must be a curious sight in the winter, though, to have all these trees surrounded by these structures.
It's very curious before the snow covers them.
Those folks know how to deal with snow. They get a lot of it.
Yeah.
Have to handle it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Stella.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye. Bye. Appreciate the call. Good way to do it. It'll probably be pretty simple to make.
Mm-hmm.
Jackie in Milwaukee, hello to you.
Good morning. One question. I don't get down on my knees well, so I had two. What do you call them?
Raised beds, maybe?
Raised beds. I had two raised beds put in that are wood. I'd like to use one of them for perennial herbs like garlic, sage, shallots, things like that. Is that a practical thing to do?
Sure. Raised beds work very well with all sorts of plants.
Yeah.
Is your concern that they won't do well in that soil, that it'll be too well drained or something like that, or is it a concern with the wood?
I have no idea. I have never put anything in the ground like that before. And the other one is going to be other vegetables in the spring, summer, whatever. But I didn't know how sage and the others would do in an area like that.
They probably will do fine, especially if it's a raised bed that is surrounded by something to hold it in. You're saying it's wood.
Oh, yeah, it's wood. And the other question, I have a Korean spice. I used to have two. A rabbit ate one of them last year before. This one has done very well, but it never blossomed. What, you know, I don't, do you fertilize them? I never had one before. When I had the two of them and they blossomed, it was not for long, but the scent was absolutely marvelous.
I know. It's spectacular. It's one of my favorite shrubs, especially for their fragrance. And sun is probably the main issue with them, is that they will tolerate some shade, but they will not flower as well.
They're in full sun. It's in full sun.
Okay, well, then that one's not, that's not causing problems.
Okay. What about fertilizing?
they usually don't need fertilizer to encourage them to bloom.
You may
use some fertilizer, but if you use too much fertilizer, especially using nitrogen fertilizer, it will prevent them from blooming.
I didn't use any. Mm-hmm. The other question, which I hope will be quick, they say nature abhors a vacuum. I had my whole backyard cleared of all the weeds and everything that were in there. Now I have a couple of spaces that are just ground. Would it be better to try and put some kind of an interim thing in there? Because our problem before was thistles. Mm-hmm. And they're all gone. They pop up once in a while, and I attack them. But would planting something like, a kind of a
cover crop?
Would that help?
Yes, it probably would. It does help to keep weeds down, to have either a cover crop planted in there or something, because I'm trying to envision this. If you have had everything removed, is there just grass there now, or is there no grass here?
Nothing.
Nothing. Okay.
Nothing.
What do you intend to do with the area?
Thistles that were taller than I was, and there was no other way to go.
Well, you need to get that soil covered with some kind of vegetation, because it will definitely sprout up weeds again, because weed seeds will blow in, they'll be brought in by the birds. There's probably a good bank of weed seeds in there if it had been very weedy. So, yes, you'd need to plant something in there. And, you know, you might try just planting some turf grass in there.
Turf grass. What about no mow?
No mow is an option. It is not a very manicured look, which some people
don't mind.
Mm-hmm. In that setting, that probably would be okay. I think it grows to about 6 inches or so or more in height, and it still does need to be mowed at least once a year, if not twice a year. But that's a possibility.
And it could be cut down and something else could be planted.
Yeah. Hopefully. Yes, but that would continue to grow. You know, it is a perennial. It would keep coming back, the no-mow lawn. But, yeah, you can plant other things in amongst it, certainly.
Okay.
All right.
I thank you much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Jackie in Avoca, your turn. Hi, Jackie.
Yes, good afternoon. Another Jackie. I have a question about my elm tree that's in my yard. I always think about Dutch elm's disease, but that's not what it has. It's lost most of its leaves. Brown and yellow get on the leaves, and then they're just falling. It's some kind of blight or some kind of fungus, do you think?
Well, Dutch elm isn't out of the question, that's for sure. But there are also leaf spot fungi that will, you know, infect leaves of elm trees. Depends on what they look like. I think the most common thing probably is Dutch elm disease.
Well, it was beautiful in the spring and early summer until the hot weather and humidity came, and there was no dead spots as you would look up into the crown. There were no, you know, withering dead spots.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if it is a fungus or a blight, it will come back, won't it?
Yes, it will. And what would be helpful this year, if you wanted to take some of those leaves to your county extension office and find out if they can assist you with that, they can send it to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Lab in Madison, find out exactly what fungus it is, and then if there's a way to treat it. But if you don't want to go that route at the expense of that, just getting those leaves taken away and cleared away this fall will help a lot.
Oh, yes.
Because
yes.
The fungus that's on those leaves, then at least you've gotten it out of the way, and then wait and see what happens next year and keep a real close eye on it and get a sample submitted as soon as the symptoms occur.
Right. When it was smaller, we could spray it for fungus, but now it's too big.
Yeah.
You can't reach up there. And the funny thing is there's an old broken-off elm tree down the street, lightning hit it or something, and it's beautiful. The leaves are perfect.
Oh, doesn't it go to figure?
Yeah. And then one more comment about the gentleman that had the ants in his yard.
Yeah.
I was a youngster, but my grandpa used to boil water and bring it out and pour it on the anthills.
Mm-hmm. You know, Phil Pelletieri still talks about that.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if it did any good, but yeah, that's what he did.
Yeah, you need to pour enough down there to get that boiling water right down to the bottom.
Right. So that is done.
It is done.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Louise in Hillsboro, hi to you.
Just fine. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a young maple tree that I planted about 4 years ago, and it's grown very happily ever since. And just the other day, I happened to be walking by it and looked, and the leaves had a black, almost tarry-looking spot on them, and I was wondering what that was.
It's called black tar spot.
Good name.
It really is. And you can see why, because it does look like a black, tarry spot. And it's caused by a fungus. And it's mostly cosmetic. It's not really hurting the plant all that much. It will be worse in some years than others due to the weather. And the best thing you can do right now is rake up those leaves and get rid of them as they fall this year. Don't put them into your compost pile. Get them off the property.
Absolutely.
sometimes you have more problems with it than others, but it's not really hurting the tree.
All right.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Myron in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi there. What? I got a green ash.
Okay.
And it has ash flower gall. And I was wondering, it's got so bad, it seems like some of the branches are dying. And what I've read about it is, you know, it's mostly cosmetic, but is there any good treatment for that?
Yeah, it generally doesn't harm the tree, and it often doesn't recur year after year after year, but the galls themselves, once they've browned, will hang onto the tree for a couple of years. So they'll be there for a long time. One of the things they recommend is to use a good strong garden hose and just try and blast some of those off the tree to make the tree look better. But with a large tree, it shouldn't be harming the tree. There may be other things at issue here, however. The plant may be experiencing some stress because of the droughts and stuff. It needs to be kept well watered during the growing season, even if it's a big mature tree. And so giving it tender, loving care will probably help it more than anything. And I really am reluctant to recommend a pesticide
sure.
for the ash flower gall because it really is not causing problems with the tree. It's not really stressing the tree out.
Okay, it's not going to cause any branches to die then.
No. The ash flower gall should not do that. Now, other things may, and it may be other stresses that are doing that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Janine in Kewaskum, hello.
Yes, hello, thank you. I would like to know if you recommend dividing butterfly bush and hardy hibiscus, and if so, what's the best way to go about doing that and when?
Ooh, I'm going to have to think about those a little bit. Butterfly bush. They do suggest that you don't cut that down in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
In the spring, they emerge very, very late.
Yes.
When would you transplant? I don't know. Boy, I really don't know what the answer to that one would be because of it is a little bit unusual for that reason. They don't recommend that you cut it down in the fall. You leave it growing all up all winter long, even though you know those stems are probably going to die back to the ground pretty much. And then it emerges so late in the spring that I guess doing it in the spring, I would try the fall. No, do the spring. No, try the fall. I'm sorry, I can't make a decision.
Okay, well, I guess maybe I would wait then until they start emerging, but I guess part of the question I had, too, is because the butterfly bush in particular is such a woody type of plant. I mean, can I actually divide that?
Probably not divide it, no.
Okay, just move it.
It is more of a shrub. It does sucker somewhat from the roots, so you may be able to cut apart chunks that have good viable buds on the roots or the stems that are arising from individual roots.
Okay.
But, no, it's not like the standard perennial that has a crown that can kind of tear apart and it fills in again.
Okay, and the hardy hibiscus is, I mean, that one's really not woody as much, but it's also a very late bloomer.
Yes.
And so are your recommendations same for that? Or
I guess thinking, too, about the kind of rule of thumb that says if something flowers in the fall, then you transplant it, dig it, divide it, whatever, in the spring.
Right.
And if it flowers in the spring, then you do that in the fall. So maybe applying that rule of thumb would be helpful. That one, too, I would imagine would be a little sensitive to being dug and divided. I don't know that would tolerate being divided that well either. Because it is sort of a woody. The stems do get woody. It's just that they've died back every year in a warmer climate. It would be a woody plant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Well, I'll give it my best shot. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. And Sherry in Menominee, quick question from you.
Yes. I have some low-growing junipers, and I have sedums that border the low-growing junipers, and I'm having trouble with mice eating my sedum. They appear to be living in the junipers, and then last year I lost 10 of my sedums. They had eaten the bulbs and the roots and everything right down. So do you have any suggestions to managing the mice?
Mouse traps.
Yeah, that's the best.
Really? Using mouse traps or mouse bait, they've got what they call place packs, you know, the little bags that have the mouse poison in it, and you stick it in underneath the shrubs. and they'll be attracted to that, and that may be your best bet for controlling them. Wherever there's close, tight vegetation is where mice love to live, especially over the winter, and if it's a woody plant like the juniper, and junipers are very commonly injured by mice, so I'm not surprised that they're there, but they're eating the more succulent sedums because they're there too. So I think your alternative, probably the best alternative, is mouse poison or mouse
trap. Or both. Mm-hmm. Or both. And thanks, Sherry, for calling. And Sharon, thank you so much. As always, you did a great job, and look forward to your next visit.
Well, very good, and thank you very much, Larry. I do have a quick announcement, if I have just half a second.
Sure.
The Milwaukee County Fair is being hosted here in Milwaukee next weekend, the 28th, 29th, and 30th at State Fair Park. We'll be in the Wisconsin Products Building on State Fairgrounds, and the general public can enter entries into the fair just like you do any other county fair. This will be our first open county fair in Milwaukee County, and we hope people come down to the fairgrounds to join us. It's also the day for Harvest Fair and World Beef Expo and the Fall Home Remodeling Show. So there's lots going
there
on at the fairgrounds. Stop in and say hi to us at the Wisconsin Products Building.
Thanks, Sharon. Sharon Morrissey, Milwaukee County UW Extension Horticulture Agent. Thanks for listening, and please stay with us.